Hello and welcome back to Talking Talmud. I'm Ann Gordon here with my friend and chavruta here, Dana Azband. Our daf of the day, Masechet Bava Metzia, Daf Zayin, page 7. So I'm sure you've all been waiting to find out what happens to the bathhouse, the case of the bathhouse. First, the Gemara continues with the discussion of the Bechor. Then it raises a question even more specifically about the redemption of a Peter Chamor, the firstborn donkey. And then it comes back to the question about the bathhouse. My hava alei the masuta. What did they decide? You know, what was the halachic conclusion here? So it kind of sidesteps all the discussion about the bechor. Tashma, the Amar Rabbi Chiya bar Avin. The conclusion here is what Rabbi Chiya bar Avin presented, namely hava of Avoda Bay Rav Chista. This happened in the place or the school of Rav Chista. What happened? Rav Chista Bay Rav Hanuna, Rav Huna. Rav Chista brought the case before Rav Huna. Upshata Behada Amar Rav Nachman, Kol Mamon She'en Yachol Otzio B'Dayanin Hekdisho Eino Kadosh. So in that case, again, this was an issue of property where there had been a case of, consecrating it. And the conclusion was, according to Rav Nachman, that any property that cannot be change hands, I guess, cannot be recovered from the possession of the other party, right, by legal process. Meaning, if the court can't do anything about it, then the conclusion is it didn't. The consecration did not take place. It just was never consecrated. Meaning the idea that you can consecrate something and then it's just lost forever, right? That the law has no recourse is rejected by Rav Nachman. There has to be recourse where the court could, or, you know, whatever, the legal process can then say, okay, no, this reverts to the original owner, for example. So that sounds very... tied up a neat package with a bow, except for the Gemara, of course, is going to ask on this. Well, then the flip side of that is that if you could recover the property from by legal means, from the court, whatever, then the consecration would be legal, right? It would stand. And isn't that problematic, right, to say, oh, I'm consecrating this thing that you are claiming is yours? Right. This is exactly the question. He hasn't taken possession of it in full. He's still consecrating what seems not to be his. Don't we know? We've got another case, right? That Rabbi Yochanan said that in the case of a robbery, right, where party A robs from party B, but party B hasn't given up hope of ever getting it back, then not only can the original owner not consecrate it while it's in the hands of the robber, but the robber can't consecrate it even though it's not in the hands of the original owner, because the original owner still has that claim, that name of owner. So the Gemara says, "Ze lefi she'ena shelo, ze lefi she'ena birshuto." Right? We've seen this phrasing before in Baba Kama. We saw, you know, it's not in his possession, in the owner's possession, and it's not in his reshut, it's not under his auspices of the thief. So it seems you should say, well, so he can't consecrate it. The Gemara answers, did you think we were talking about metaltlin? I think we're talking about movable property, that you could say it's in one person's reshut, domain, auspices, as compared to another's? We're talking about a bathhouse, right? A bathhouse is a physical standing property. But masuta mikarkai askinan, it's not a movable bath. It's something that's actually, you know, has a foundation in the ground. So then in that case, once we're talking about a circumstance under which the owner could in fact deal with the law and get it back from the court, right? Then you don't have to take possession of it because it's already in his possession, meaning it's in exactly the same physical location that it always was when he had it fully under his own domain. So to say that the consecration couldn't work, couldn't take hold, right, is exactly, the Gemara says, no, it could take hold because it, once you can undo it, then it could take hold to begin with, because this is different from the robbery case of Rabbi Yochanan, you know, where where you don't have, where the owner doesn't have yeush and neither of them can consecrate out from under the other one. In this case, there's no out from under because the bathhouse is right where it always was. The one party, and as they did, consecrated the bathhouse. And then the question is, you know, is there a way to undo that? It certainly made life difficult for all the rabbis who avoided that place.
So when we're talking about property disputes, I'm really struck by that this case they brought up about consecrating is like very unique to halakha, right? Like, I don't know anywhere else in the world, if you're talking about a system of civil law, where this would become an actual case. Like, I'm curious if there are ancient codes of law where this type of case comes up. Like, this just seems very uniquely halakhic slash Jewish.
Yeah, I hear that. It's a good question. I wonder if even in more, I don't know what happens in a purely Christian country, right? Can you, if something is dedicated to the church, does it have a different legal standing than regular ownership? And if it does, I would say they got it from us, right? I don't have an answer here.
Right. So I just think it's interesting to see that there's sort of this other status of something that you, there's ownership of property. And then there's this idea, you know, we know there's hefker, like, you know, saying like no one owns the property. We have this idea of yeush, which is, you know, you sort of give up on property. But then, you know, there's this another concept that gets thrown in, which is you decide to willingly say the property belongs to God or the, you know, the property belongs to the temple. And then what happens in this type of scenario where there's sort of two claims of ownership to that property? So I just think it's like a really uniquely halachic discussion here. Okay, I'm going to move on to a braisa that gets quoted later on in this amud, but gets, you know, discussed for pretty much the rest of the daf. So I'm going to read the braisa and then I'm going to go to a discussion about it on amud bet. So the braisa reads as follows: Tanu Rabbanan, shnayim adukim b'shtar. So if two people basically come to a Beit Din and they're both holding on to a, you know, a note of indebtedness, meaning, you know, there's somebody owes somebody money. So the creditor says, it's mine, it fell for me, and then I found it. But the debtor says, it was yours, but I repaid it to you. So in other words, there's no questionnaire about who's the creditor, who's the debtor, right? Who's the lender and who was the borrower? But one is claiming, you know, I, the creditor is saying, yeah, I kind of lost the shtar and then I found it. And then the debtor is saying, no, I actually repaid it to you. Itkayem. So the document must be certified through its signers, meaning the witnesses whose name are on the document have to say that this is actually an authentic document. Divrei Rabbi, that's what Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi says. Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel Omer, yechaloku, right? So he says that they should divide it equally. Now that's what I want to talk about is what does this mean that they should divide it equally? And then they have a third part to this braisa, which is, sorry, the next part, second part to the braisa, which is what if the document is with a third party? Nafel yad dayan, right? If the document was in the hands of a judge, lo yatsiu olamit. The principals cannot ever retrieve the document from him. Rabbi Yossi Omer, Rabbi Yossi says, Harehu b'chazkato. The document retains a status as a valid document. So this is, you know, this is talking here, right? What does it mean that, you know, that if the document is basically with a judge, okay, they sort of, they can't, you can never take it from the judge. And this allows it to sort of retain its validity as a document until it is collected. Okay, there's a whole other discussion about what that part means. That's not what I want to talk about today. But I want to speak about is this Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel Omer, right? What is it that we do with Yechlaku, right? Okay, so we have this, you know, opinion of Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi and of Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel. So Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi is basically saying that if they're both holding the document, we don't automatically assume that it's, you know, a good document. First, you have to have the Beit Din sort of like certify that it is a good document. And then, you know, the creditor can probably collect the entire, you know, can collect the debt, right? But the point that Rabbi Yehuda Nasi is saying is that you have to verify the validity of the document before you can even get to a discussion about collection. And then you have Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel, who basically says, yachaloku, right, that they should divide it equally. So the question becomes, you know, what exactly does that mean? What is the yachaloku, okay? So the Gemara is going to basically present two different interpretations of what this could mean. Amar Rabbi Elazar. Rabbi Elazar says machloket, right? When he says, right, that we say we divide it, bishnehem adukim betofes. This only refers to a case, right, where the creditor and the debtor are holding on to the document's form, ushnehem batoref, or they're both holding to the essence. Now, remember, this was something that came up with particularly when we talked about Gittin, right? That there's sort of this, like, there's the tofes and the toref, right? And so that these are basically, these are two different things, right? The toref is the piece that makes it unique to that document, right? The date, the name of the people involved with it, the amount of the loan. The tofes is sort of just like your standard contractual information. So the tofes is always, you know, sort of going to be the same from document to document. It's the toref that's different. So what he's basically saying is that they both have to be holding on to the same part of the document. Either they're both holding the tofes or they're both holding the toref. But if one is holding the tofes, right, which remember is the general, you know, same to same, no batch variability from document to document, but one is holding on the toref, which is what's different from each document, zenotel tofes, right? From this, you take the document's form, the zenotel toref, and then the other person takes the essence. In other words, whatever payment or whatever was included in the tofes person gets, and who's ever holding onto the toref, they get the piece of the toref. Because the idea is that whatever part they're holding, they assume to be his. But Rabbi Yochanan mar li olam chokim. Mm-hmm. Rabbi Yochanan says, no, you just take the amount of whatever it is, and you just basically divide it actually in half. Now, I find what's interesting here is that the idea is that there's going to be some type of payment with the tofes and some type of payment with the toref. I can't quite understand what that would look like. And I looked in the commentaries and I couldn't actually figure out what that would be either. You know, they sort of were just talking about generally of toref versus tofes. Okay. They're going to challenge what Rabbi Yochanan says from a brisa. Now, Rabbi Yochanan, right, he wants to say that even if someone's holding the tofes and someone's holding the toref, right, you're just going to, you divide it equally still. The hatan, it was taught in a brisa. Zenotel ad makom sheyado magat. This one takes the portion of the garment as far as his hand reaches. So in other words, if you had two people holding a garment, you sort of cut it or divide it based on where they are actually touching it. And so this would sort of be according to how Rabbi Elazar understands Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel's opinion in this brisa, right? If you're touching tofes, you get tofes. If you're touching toref, you get toref. Because the idea is you're holding that part of the document. Now, again, I'm trying to figure out, like, how big could these documents have been? Like, is it literally two people shuffling along holding a document together? I'm not sure. So then the Gemara tries to limit what Rabbi Yochanan is saying. Lo tzricha, right? Rabbi Yochanan's case, ruling applies to a case, the kaitorev be matze, in which the document's toref is in the middle, so that nobody's actually holding it, right? And in that case, they just divide the document. But in the Bryce's case, where each principal is holding a different section, Rabbi Yochanan would actually agree with Rabbi Elazar. Now, the Gemara is again going to challenge this. Ihecha maila meimar, right? If so, why do we have to have Rabbi Yochanan's ruling, right? Like, what is he adding by saying this? So the Gemara answers, lo tzricha, right? We need, it's necessary. Demekariv legabe dechad, in which the document's essence is closer to one of the principals than the other. In other words, where you have a case where the toref is in the middle, okay? The toref is going to be closer to one than the other. Mahu detema amai le pluge hachle. And so you may say, since the toref is close, one person is close, you know, the principal is closer to the toref, right? He could say, divide it this way. Kamash malan, we learn otherwise. To amarle, because you could say, the other person could say, my chazit de plakta hachi. Why do you think you should divide it this way, right? Plokachi, divided the other way, so will actually be of equal value. So I can't visually figure out what these cases actually are. Like, I understand how big a document could be. I can't imagine these were hugely large documents. I've never seen such a thing, you know? So I'm having like a very visual difficulty kind of understanding how these cases actually worked. Or are these cases just really meant to be sort of, I don't know, like sort of playing out the legal limits of like who owns what when there's a dispute? And they're presenting it in a very physical way of like people actually holding the document itself.
I think that might have to be our conclusion, right? Otherwise, like literally what? They're walking down the street, each of them holding like, let's say it's put in a nice folder or rolled up, right? So each of them is holding onto half of the baton, as it were. It's hard to think that they're walking for long like that, you know?
That's what I'm saying. There's something about this that I don't totally understand. The cloak case makes much more sense, right? Like you could see how, you know, somebody has like, you know, a garment or they're both holding onto something. Again, are you shuffling along into Beitin like that? I don't know. The document case just, it's difficult to understand like what it actually means.
But in concept, it makes sense, right? Meaning we can understand that each of them is laying claim to this document. So if it's just playing it out, I kind of get that.
Yeah. And even here, the specificity of like, someone's touching the Toref part, somebody's holding the Tofes part, and that's how you would divide it. I don't know, like, how big were these documents actually? And also, you really feel you have claim to it. So would you really, you know, want to be able to say, like, oh, no, I only thought I had the Tofes, and the other person is saying, no, I only thought I had the Toref. I don't know. I'm just left with a lot more questions after this step. I don't have good resolution here.
I also wonder, like, would you be worried about damaging it, right? You know, I think about, you're talking about paper or even some other kind of parchment or vellum or something like that. I don't know. Is it going to get squished? I don't know. I'm hearing your question. I think it's a good one. I think that practically speaking, you know, I think those kinds of practical questions were not always entertained because that's not what the Gemara is most focused on. Sometimes, but mostly, right, the question of what are the implications of who's holding which part, as opposed to tachlis, how did that work?
That's our DAP discussion for the day. Ringus, review us on all major podcasts. Thank you to Rabbi Michelle Farber for hosting us on the Hanja website. Let us know what you thought about this stuff on our Talking Talmud Facebook page. And until tomorrow, go and learn.